As Chris said, my name is Matthew Indest. I'm with USDA ARS as a postdoc out of New Orleans, and I'm presenting a portion of the research on using near-infrared spectroscopy as a way to measure fiber quality of cotton bales at the gin. So over the past 25 to 30 years, near-infrared's been researched as a way to assess cotton for its fiber properties, and over those studies, they've shown that good correlation between near-infrared absorbance and some of the fiber traits. I've listed below a handful of those that looked at micronair. It seems to be the trait that was most commonly found in the literature. And in those designed experiments, they were controlling one variable at a time and trying to control variation from any other sources. And with that, they were able to find a high R-square in their data set and acceptable root mean square errors, but the differences in these different lab-based prediction models, you can see here the different spectral ranges, the samples, sample sizes, and there were also the conditions that were tested under, such as the sample preparation or presentation, different environmental conditions, but these were all done in a lab under a controlled experiment. And we were interested to see how these models would hold up in an industrial application, which is vastly different from the lab environment, which is conditioned. So in industrial applications such as a gin, we have a lot more uncontrolled variability. Within and between days, there's differences in temperature, relative humidity, the dust that's floating around, and the lighting, and that's just a few of them. And if these remain unaccounted for, then the amount of variance that is attributable to the error will limit potentially the predictability of regression models. So we wouldn't expect to see as high of an R-square, or possibly the prediction error could be higher. But the question we wanted to find out to assess some of the claims that were in the literature was, are these models able to be applied in the field and predict well enough to be useful for whatever purpose you have. So using an automated system that's depicted here, the near-infrared would scan the bales at the scale and take a near-infrared absorbance. So we wanted to take one of those lab-based models and use it to predict micronair in real time. So this was a model developed in the lab under conditioned under standard conditioning on 191 cottons that represented a wide range of micronair from about 2.5 to 5.6. And we were able to find, we had an R-square of 0.9 and an RMSE of 0.17. And so this model looked promising in terms of its ability to predict itself. And so when we applied it to the gin, we wanted to see if that held up. So that required us to start collecting data at the gin. And we were taking 4 data points along the pump side of the bale and collected 1,327 bales worth of near-infrared absorbance values. And then when classroom reports were added as the quality reference values, partial least squares regression was used to model this. The range in micronair for these bales is shown on that in this histogram. We had about 4.5 to a 5.5 in our micronair range. And to show how the unit just would come in and be pressed into the bale, and the pressure sensor would detect that it's against the bale. And so we were getting consistent depth and pressure against the bale surface. Now, when we applied that lab model and deployed it with the unit, these were the predicted versus reference. This is the plot of those predicted versus reference values. And we see a R-square that was just terrible, 0.11. And our RMSE was 0.55. And that's more than, our error was greater than the range of the data set here. So we were shown that the lab-based model did not predict as well, or did not predict well at all, when applied to a industrial application like the gin. So one thing we just wanted to start investigating what potential causes were there and how can we use this data to accurately predict in situations like the gin. So I looked at the difference between the spectral absorbance, both in the lab and the gin, and they're compared here over the range. And what's evident in this lower range from about 900 to 1100 nanometers is the amount of noise that's in the gin versus the blue line in the lab, which is relatively stable and flat. So that was a very noisy region, and also across the entire spectral range, we have a much tighter grouping of the lab samples versus the gin samples. So there was some immediately evident differences between the near-infrared absorbance. And this is after a derivative pretreatment to correct for a scatter and also correct for baseline shifts to get them on the same scale. Now, to move on from that, the samples that were in the lab were not representative of the samples in the gin, and that's, I think, the problem with deploying a lab-based model outside of the environment that it was developed in. So we divided that 1,327 bales into two sets, one to calibrate a model, which was about 40% of those bales, and the remaining 60% were used to test that model. So this is the R-square that we were getting using samples in the gin, and the same partially squares regression was used to develop this model. We got an R-square of 0.43, but our RMSE was much less than we saw and when we applied the lab model to the gin samples. So we're getting 0.107, and there's a cross-validation procedure for detecting outliers and stuff, and it was consistent with the R-square and RMSE of the model itself. So when we apply this calibration model to our testing set of 815 bales, that's 60% of the bales that we collected, our prediction remained about what we expected from the model's development. An R-square of 0.49 and a root mean square error for the prediction at 0.104. And so this model was better able to predict new samples. That is likely because they were representative of the samples they were developed from, the model was developed from. So we weren't extrapolating from the lab into the gin. So one of the things, though, is that we'd like to see better R-square and see how that error, what that error means in terms of our microinerr prediction. And one thing that I wanted to look at was the variation within a day or between days. So colored here is the bales in sequential order. Now we collected over 7 days worth of data, but these were not consecutive days. But the bales are ordered in the number that they were in their sequence and grouped by day in the color. So there's some evident trends such as the green here, see a downward trend over the course of the day and then back up. And in a few other places, there's just some trending there that we're trying to investigate the cause of as a potential source of variation that we can account for and maybe improve the model that way. And in some of the previous literature, tolerance for prediction of microinerr had been set at levels like 0.03. And within that level of tolerance, we found only 11 bales to be considered outliers. So this was 1.3% of our collected bales. But we'd like to see a tighter tolerance if we were going to be able to apply this in more situations. So in restricting the tolerance to 0.15, we found that 85 bales were outliers, and that only represented 10% of the data set. So there was some promising results there as we looked at our ability to predict in the gin. And as I broke it down a little bit finer to 0.1, which is about 30, almost 30, a third of our sample. So we'd like to improve that, but there's some steps before we get there. So, quickly, I'm just going to cover the strength as well, since we have the full classing report. We wanted to look at some of the other traits that were there, and the same process was done, partially squares on these bales to calibrate a model. Now, we didn't have a model to implement in real time for strength, but this was developed in the same way of the calibration bales, and then applied to the validation set. So we had an R-square of 0.5 and an RMSE of 0.7. And when applied to the validation set, we saw similar results with a R-square of 0.52 and RMSE of prediction. And that's the standard deviation of the differences from the reference values, so at 0.64. And again, when you cover those by the day and the bales in sequence, some of that trending changes. So in that third day with the green, we don't see that downward and upward trend. So the effect that it's having on prediction of specific traits is an interesting finding there. So to see if we can identify the cause and improve the model is some of the next steps in this. So this is only 1 year of data, and as we move forward, we collected more bales in this last season, or in 2017. Over 4,000 bales were collected, and their near-infrared scans were increased per bale, so we were taking 4 in that first year, and we've upped that to 16 scans along the side. And we've also increased the speed that the system is able to measure, so it's possible to go to faster ginning output speeds with this now. With this data that's currently being analyzed, we'd like to see how the first year's model will perform across years. So the problem we face, though, is that the available data from last year was only a range of 1 for Micronear. So we expect a lot lower Micronear in this next set. So the ability of that model to predict this current year might be limited, and have to train the model with new samples to represent that lower range. And that's typical of some of these models as they develop over years. And so it'd be interesting to see how it holds up. But we'd also like to collect across multiple gens to get a better representation of the region in terms of fiber quality and have a wider sample set. And it's also possible to look at specific wavelengths that would be most associated to the fiber properties of interest to see if some of that noise can be either eliminated in the near-infrared absorbance spectra as just one way to improve the prediction. But in all, I guess to conclude it and wrap it all up here, the near-infrared absorbance does have potential to measure fiber quality, but most of the research had been done in a lab and measured in a lab. In those conditions that both the sample and the testing equipment are in, they're very controlled. So we need to, if we want to see this in the field and in industry, we need to take samples from that environment and use that to develop a model to predict the samples coming out of that later. So that is the, I guess, main takeaway there. So I'd like to acknowledge some of the people who worked on the system to measure and take this data over the season, and also Randy Ainsworth for the use of his gin and the Obvious Solutions for lending the instrument and some help with the software that was fitting to the process that we were working in. So with that, I'd like to open it to any questions that anybody may have. Yes.
One quick question.
These were this was classing reports that the data came from, so it was HBI Micronair, and that's what we were hoping to predict as an early predictor of those classing values to get an idea. So that answers your question. in addition to it, yes. I mean, you'd have it at the moment that it comes off the gen. So
the idea is not so much that it's a replacement for classing, but since when bales get to the warehouse the same day they're ginned, or even a lot of gins are now warehousing at the gin, they don't have classing data. So our warehouses have no organization. Our warehouses are organized just first in. And then we put shipments together, we're moving the bales repeatedly. So the idea is just efficiency. There's also potential to use this data to feed back to the gin for gin control and improve quality. So, all right, thank you.
We used the range that the instrument was covering, so 900 to 1650. So there was some range. This is what's commercially available, whereas some of the research instruments, they were measuring at higher wavelength, but those aren't available to commercial use. So that's what we were talking about, restricting it to certain wavelengths. On interactions. Yes, that's what, yeah, there was a second derivative and some scatter.